Continuing with our review of the many conversations going on in the aftermath of the El Paso and Dayton mass shootings, one of the points of focus is getting out ahead of a tragedy in order to prevent it. The most frequently discussed path is the use of what are called red flag laws, which will allow guns to be removed from the possession of people who are posing a threat. My next guest joins us to discuss the concerns and questions that this idea raises, along with being a senior fellow in constitutional jurisprudence with the Independence Institute. He's also the author of books, including The Law of Article 5, State Initiation of Constitutional Amendments, Professor Rob Nadelson. How are you today, Professor?
It's great to be with you, and I am great as well.
And the website to learn more about the Independence Institute, i2i.org. So just explain a little more detail. What generally is the concept of the red flag laws?
The idea is getting guns out of the hands of people who might serve as a risk to themselves or others. So what happens is that, depending upon the state, either the police or an individual go to court, and they argue that this person poses a risk. Generally, the initial hearing is without any notice to the gun owner, and the experience is that these temporary orders are almost always granted. Well, once the judge issues a temporary order, the police go to the gun owner's house and basically remove all the guns, tell them he's got to get rid of them, and they take the guns into custody. And then at the end of a period specified in the law, maybe usually about 2 weeks, there is a general hearing in which the defendant gets a chance to defend himself and explain why he should have his guns back. If the petitioner, the person complaining, wins at that hearing, then the gun owner can lose his firearms for a much longer period of time, usually a year, again, according to the state law involved.
And New Jersey is one of 17 states, as well as the District of Columbia, which has some level of red flag laws. New Jersey's law pretty much parallels what the professor just detailed. But among the 17 states in D.C., is there that consistency, or are some states more lax, more strict than others?
They differ. For example, in Connecticut, only a police officer can seek what's called an emergency protection order. On the other hand, in Colorado, anyone can seek such an order, so long as that person has any number of tenuous links to the gun owner. It could, of course, be someone like a spouse or a brother, but it also could be someone like an estranged lover or a neighbor.
Which I hear that, and we talked about domestic violence for another topic earlier in the show, and I hear that, and also something you touched on in one of your articles, red flag bills, a new front in the progressive attack on the Bill of Rights. That would set up the scenario with that Colorado law where if someone is or is planning to commit domestic violence against a target, well, what better thing to do than try to degun them?
Right. And there is actually, you know, there's very little evidence that that red flag laws work. I mean, you wonder why they're even talking about them. It's somewhat political because there's two studies out there that I've found. One is that they may decrease suicides slightly. Another one found that they may increase rapes slightly, but they have no overall effect on violent crime. The concern about increasing rapes is because if, for example, an abusive lover wants to disarm his estranged girlfriend, what he could do is go into court, make various allegations. The court probably will issue the order because the court doesn't want to be blamed for any violence that may occur later on. And the poor woman is disarmed, and then the abusive lover can come after her. So that's a scenario that we don't have a lot of examples of yet, but the slight increase in the rape rate as a result of red flag, or at least associated with red flag, does raise some, shall we say, some red flags.
Well, is that the consequence of it being a fragmented law of a little variable among the 17 states in D.C. versus if there was one standard, here it is, one-size-fits-all federal law that had the multi-level steps that had to be taken, much like New Jersey has right now?
It's a little easier to test a law or to test a legal concept if it's uniform, obviously. But I don't think that they differ enough to really make a major to create a major problem for researchers. I mean, the law in New York, for example, the law in Colorado, the law in California, they're similar enough so that I think they can be pretty well lumped together. There have also been some single state studies, but and obviously they wouldn't just involve one law, but with mixed results. One of the disturbing things about these laws, in fact, perhaps the most disturbing, afflicts almost all of them, and that is the disregard or the watering down of basic due process rights for gun owners who were accused of being risks to themselves or others. Remember, these people are losing their property. They've not been convicted of a crime. It's nothing like that. And back in 1969, in a case called Snyadek versus Family Finance, which was actually considered a big victory for liberals and civil libertarians, the U.S. Supreme Court said that if you want to freeze someone's assets, not even just take them away, but if you want to freeze someone's assets, you have to follow some very rigorous standards of proof and of pleading, and even then, if you can only freeze them for, let's say, a week or two. Well, the red flag laws, by and large, disregard those standards. And let me just mention them, if I may.
Sure.
Generally speaking, traditionally, if it's rare to be able to freeze someone's assets or take away someone's assets without giving the person a hearing. But in the rare cases you can, generally speaking, the court will require you to post a bond if you want an order like that. The court will require you to prove that there is an imminent danger of irreparable harm. That's a formal legal standard. An imminent danger of irreparable harm. It's going to happen right away. And the court will require that you prove this not by the usual standard, which is called fair preponderance of the evidence, but by a heightened evidentiary standard called clear and convincing evidence. Now, these terms may sound a little vague, but the courts have centuries of working with those standards, so they're not strange to the courts. What the red flag laws do is they generally water down all those rules for preliminary hearings. For example, many of them don't require a bond at all. So if the order was issued based upon a pack of lies, it's very difficult to get any recourse against the person who lied to the court. The standard for is not imminent danger of irreparable harm, but usually something like significant risk of injury. Well, significant risk, that's generally, I mean, it's somewhere below probable, and so you see that these due process standards that the U.S. Supreme Court has traditionally relied upon are watered down by these laws. That's why I called it a progressive assault on the Bill of Rights, because it's not just an assault on the Second Amendment, which people can understand, but also on the 14th Amendment, also on the 6th Amendment, the 5th Amendment rule against taking the property without compensation, the 4th Amendment protection against unreasonable searches and seizures, and so forth. People, again, against people who are suspected of being dangerous but have never actually done anything wrong.
We're having our time with Professor Rob Nadelson, who is a senior fellow in constitutional jurisprudence with the Independence Institute. He's also author of books including The Law of Article 5, State Initiation of Constitutional Amendments, I2I.org is the website for the Independence Institute. You're listening to Issues and Ideas. Again, getting back to, you point out in your writings the flaws and the open doors of the current red flag laws. They always say that, well, one is better than none. If, again, a proper federal fully covered law was put into place that would have higher mandates, guarantee everyone's face is going to be in front of everyone's face at the various hearings and trials. There is no testimony by phone or notarized documents. Is that at least a part of the equation that could resolve the rise of gun violence that we're seeing, not just in the mass shootings, but in a rise in homicide, suicides as well?
Let me target that with two different answers. Number one, we'd have to see more evidence that these laws actually work. I mean, we've had them in effect now for several years in 17 states. So obviously, some are newer than others, and we just don't really see much evidence that they work. Secondly, I'm a believer in the Constitution, and this is an area where the founders and the Constitution is very clear. This is a state matter. It's not a federal matter. And so, for example, Lindsey Graham, a senator from South Carolina, wants to create a federal grant program that would give the states grants for adopting red flag laws that do protect due process. And I respect his sincerity in that. But really, another federal grant program at a time when the federal government is running astronomical deficits and has an even more astronomical debt isn't necessarily something that we need. But the area generally of criminal law is something which is supposed to be a state matter. And that's good because different states can respond in different ways. One way to explain this is if you elected a school board and the school board started passing criminal laws and trying to run the healthcare system, you would say, you know, that's not your job. You've got a particular responsibility and you're ignoring it in order to do other things. The same thing the way the Constitution set up the federal government. It gave the federal government certain responsibilities, like, for example, foreign policy, obviously a very important area, regulating commerce among the states, running the post office, creating rights in copyright and patent, dealing with national defense. These are critical sorts of things that they're supposed to do. Congress was not set up to create police regulations for the states. So I do think this needs to be kept at the state level. Now, would it be possible for a state to pass a well-crafted constitutional red flag law? Sure, it would be possible. What are the probabilities of that happening? Because of the explosive nature of the debate, the laws that have actually come out of the state legislatures don't offer a lot of hope for their ability to come up with a law that is constitutional until the courts intervene. Once the courts intervene and they start telling the state legislatures that what they've done are unconstitutional, then, Chris, you may very well see the state legislatures passing more responsible laws.
And as you can gather from the professor's explanation of this idea and the concept, it is not simply a Second Amendment issue, which is something important to remember in the debate. We're going to link to Professor Nadelson's writings on this idea because it adds something to the conversation. For those who are looking for, like a better phrase, a quick fix, well, first and foremost, there ain't no such thing. Now, and whatever the solutions are going to be from the times that we're facing are going to be overtime, just hopefully faster than the next act of evil is going to be launched. Learn more about the Independence Institute, which the professor is a senior fellow in constitutional jurisprudence with, I2I.org. You can also check out his books, including The Law of Article 5, State Initiation of Constitutional Amendments. Professor Rob Nadelson, thank you for the clarification on this idea, and thanks for being here today.
Thank you. And if I could just mention one thing, there's a book for the lay people that I've written called The Original Constitution, What It Actually Said and Meant. And it explains in objective ways exactly what the Constitution's legal effect was after the ratification of the Bill of Rights.
And you'll find them all on Amazon.com. Thanks again, Professor.
Thank you, sir.